atención, por favor. David Lee Roth.
David Lee Roth.
Atenemazinimle, David Lee Roth.
Your attention, please.
Welcome to Club Dave, where it only rains when we say so.
Rock of the Marines, story of the Fighting 3rd Infantry Division, Roth Radio. Rowing like we stole something. New York, Philly, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm Beach. You're looking at the book I'm reading from.
Yes.
These are the...
It's a manly looking book.
These are men's adventure magazines from the post-war. I love this stuff. Kill Crews of the Cast Iron Fortress. I'd like to think my career is kind of like that. You don't think so?
I was just thinking about what your place must look like. It's like half women's books, half men's books.
Here we go. Legalized prostitution, a cure for military ills. Maybe for Bin Laden.
Drop your... and grab your socks somewhere.
I think if Bin Laden actually had a life that approximated to this, that there would... I maintained earlier that it's a jealousy issue, all right? Here you can have any religion that you want. Here you can make, you can say anything that you want. You want to go to school? You can go to any kind of school you want. And you express, what do you think he's doing right now?
Well, like I said, you know, he's probably doing Sudoku or you know, some crossword puzzle or something. I can't imagine what he's doing down there, and I suppose he's in the cave version of a spider hole. But, you know, what you just said is interesting, too, with the prostitutes, because their Muslims do not have premarital sex. And that's a big issue over there, and I think that that drives a lot of people to do crazy things.
What do you think happens to guys when there's not a lot of girls? And I don't mean just prep school. I don't mean just, you know, going to West Point or whatever.
It's a sin. It's a big deal. You don't just not do it because it's going to make mommy and daddy mad. It's a whole new ball game over there.
When there's no girls around, Animal, you've worked the door at a lot of clubs. What happens when there's not enough girls in the room?
When there's not enough girls in the room, hey, they leave the house, man. Like, I got to go somewhere else and find what I'm looking for.
And if you force them to stay in the room, what will those guys do?
They'll probably tear the place apart.
And if they, will they tear each other apart?
Of course.
And have you experienced this firsthand?
Oh, several times,
then
man.
Then you're an efficient politician. Robin,
well,
I see the look.
You see what happens in prison all the time.
Oof, and that's what they're trying to do to America. That's going to hurt in the morning. 866-313-3733. Let's just go from the top of the list here, okay? Roth Radio, ruining it for everybody else. You're on. Keith.
Hey, yes.
Talk to us. Go ahead, Keith.
Hello?
Go ahead, Keith. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Dave, is this you?
This is me.
Hey, buddy. First of all, I'd like to say I listened to you on ZLX during the summer, and to paraphrase John Landis, I heard the future of talk radio, and its name was David Lee Roth.
Thank you so much.
You did a good job. Hey, real quick, I just wanted to say that my understanding is that it's Islamic tradition to offer a truce prior to attacking. Just like, it's like a good...
it's a
like
good a technique. Good I'm sorry. Turn me up here, Hutch. So it's a good technique, is what you're saying?
No, it's a tradition
that there really like are offering truce. I'm sorry. Let me express this, Hutch. Pay attention. You're saying that in fact they're offering a truce that is in fact a substantial truce. Is that right?
The debate or the question is whether he is offering a substantial truce. As tradition.
Okay, and what I'm asking you is, in fact, is the tradition meant as a ploy? Is it a fake out? Or is the tradition to really offer truce? Because I'm gonna solicit a memory of something really kind of stupid here. But what was the pirate movie with Johnny Depp in it?
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay, and there's an old pirate tradition. They call it in French, parley. Remember, they were going to fight with each other with swords, and that was it's like an old knightly tradition, you know? It's, parlay. It means to exchange the ideas. Let's turn this crisis into an opportunity for both of us or whatever. And the old pirate who was the ghost, you know, he was going to go kill Deb and he goes, parlay. And they got to stop. Are you saying that this is, what do you think it is? Do you think that this is a real truce that they're offering or just a real skillful military maneuver?
I wouldn't trust the guy. So I think that possibly because he's doing things in the name of Islam that really true Islamic people wouldn't do, and that's killing innocent people and such. So Whether or not he's following tradition that closely, I believe that he...
You think it's a ploy or do you think it's for real?
Pardon?
You think it's a ploy or is it for real? Go.
I think it's a ploy, Mike.
Thanks for calling. Robert, war topic. What do you think? Is it a ploy or is this for real? Go ahead. Roth Radio, you're on.
Hey, well, I'll tell you what. It's not what it is, I believe, a ploy, and here's why. He said he saw the polls in the United States and all these people are against it. I think he thinks if he says, oh, how about a truce, the Cindy Sheehans of the world will say, oh, look, they want to quit. Let's stop and let's do it. So they get more people and try to get more people in the streets protesting.
Okay, so what you're reflecting on is what Vo Nguyen Giap did, the 9th Viet Cong Army, which he lost many of his battles. The Tet Offensive was a horrible, disastrous loss for the North Vietnamese, but it caused such a dramatic rift in the press here in the United States, and particularly in New York City and Los Angeles and Chicago and so forth. That's when all the demonstrations really happened, and it was the students and the activists who, you know, by seeing those battles, which were pitched awful battles, you know, lobbied and demonstrated and voted against the war. And in fact, it was the Americans who decided from the inside out to end the war. And you're saying that he's trying to trigger the same thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's trying to get the people in the streets saying, hey, they want to stop. Why are we still there? Bring our troops home.
Do you think we should bring our troops home?
No. At this point, no. We shouldn't have been there. But now that we're there, we have to finish the job, I hate to say. And it's the same. It's propaganda, baby. That's all it is.
So he's fighting a war of public relations, that they just like they used to end the war in Vietnam.
In Vietnam, of course. Every single war we've been in. We were bombed during the Tet Offensive. We had negotiators sitting at the table talking to them while we were bombing the hell out of their city.
But the reason that we moved to the negotiations so quickly was not because of our bombing. The reason that we moved to the negotiations so quickly is because the American public rose up in anxiety and in confrontation against the war because of the media that was being generated from the war. And most of that media that was generated was actually conscious by the North Vietnamese Army. They did a beautiful job. They spun it into a public relations issue, right or wrong, and the American public supported what he was saying, and it was us who caused the politicians to vote against it. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Thanks for calling, Robert. 866-313-3733. Tim, he thinks the truce may be real. Number nine. Roth Radio, you're in the spotlight. What do you think? Go ahead.
How you doing, David? You're doing a really good job, man. Really
thank
like
you, sir.
You sound really good. Well, I'm an Egyptian, and I really think he's doing it to stop the killing of other Muslims in other countries. There's a lot of Muslims dying in other countries that not a lot of people here know about.
For example, share with us.
Well, Bush says 30,000 people. That, I think, is way more, maybe double the number of that.
You're talking about the people who got killed in Iraq so far, the civilians?
In Iraq, in Afghanistan. Afghanistan, you don't hear nothing about it, but you will hear about it later on. The media here, if you listen, if you ever go to any satellite or any cable kind of media, you go to, let's say, flip to an Arabic channel, and you will see how many people died and how many people faces been scrapped off, and a lot of things would happen over there.
Please share with us, as an Egyptian, what's Osama bin Laden's position going to be when Iran becomes a major issue, as if it wasn't already? Where does he stand on that? Is he going to be on the Iranian side, or is he going to religiously be in confrontation with them?
Well, I think it's usually he's been by himself the whole time. He's not really religiously in confrontation with them. I think he's mostly by himself. And right now in his position, he won't be trusting any other nations.
So you're saying that in terms of Iran, he may actually take the American approach, take the American side?
Well, he won't take any side. He'll probably stay neutral like the way he is right now. I don't think he's in cahoots with any. Like, he's not in cahoots with any other nation.
What about Iraq, sir? You seem very knowledgeable about this, and being from that part of the world, this is an interesting call here. You're saying also, well, please share with us, what would Iraq do? What would the positioning be of the Iraqi civilians when, not if, but when Iran goes ballistic and starts becoming combustible issue? Go ahead.
All right, can you say it one more time? I didn't hear you, Dave. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. It's what will the Iraqi civilians, the citizens of Iraq, what position will they take once the Iranian issue becomes really combustible, and you know that's right around the corner?
I think they will still be with Iran. They will take the Iranian side because they have seen what they have gone through. I'm sure they don't want to see another Muslims or other Muslim countries taking as many hits as they did.
And for the longest time, Iran was deadly blood enemy of Iraq. Is that not true?
Yeah, but Muslims are always together.
So the enemy of my enemy now becomes my friend.
Exactly.
Thanks for calling. That was interesting. Roth Radio, Robin?
Well, do you think that Osama will, if we accept this truce, do you think he'll really stop?
That's an interesting question. How many people does he actually represent?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if it was Saddam Hussein who was making statements of "I'll offer you this, I'll offer you that," he had, however terrible it was, the stability to bring to the table. If he said, "Oh, I'll deliver the country and everybody will behave," well, he had a real bad way of making good on his promise. But he could have delivered on that promise. Okay, who does Osama bin Laden represents? Because who was the fellow from Palestine? Yasser Arafat.
Mm-hmm.
There was always a contention. Did he represent just his own little rock band, or did he represent the whole community? Is that
your... Yeah, it's like gangs now. That's what it seems like. I was going to say small gangs, but I think they're pretty big. But who is he representing? And if we do accept the truce, will he stop? My feeling is no. And I have another question for you, Dave. Particularly being an EMT, do you think this man is psychotic?
I don't know that he's psychotic if you believe that religious fervor is actually something that exists.
Do you think there's a thin line between religious fervor and psychosis? I mean, you've been out there in the fields with people off their meds and stuff like that. What do you think?
You're talking about Van Halen during the 80s?
That and the Bronx at 4 a.m. That and the back of the truck.
Yes.
But seriously, do you think that this guy is psychotic?
Well, there's a very thin line between rage and really good musicians. Think about that. The ones who are the most angry, the most worked up, the ones who have the most ambition, the ones who are the most, you know, ballistic, I call it, make the best music, certainly in terms of the guitar playing and the singers, right?
Yeah, and he's got the grandiosity that seems to go along with psychosis and religious fervor, and so...
Also how you're raised, Robin. You know, we talk about it because we've had the advantage of a magnificent education. Even if you're coming from just basic, boring public schools back in the 70s, you had an amazing education that most people outside of the United States never even can conceive of. And are you aware of, like, between Iran and Iraq? Do you even know the difference between Sunni and Shiite?
Oh, of course I do. And also, I wasn't raised with 50 siblings. I think there were 50 or 51. He's got 51 brothers and sisters.
I think if you
probably didn't get too much attention as a kid.
Hey, sure. That's, you know, something as simple as that. Saddam Hussein was abandoned and left to go find his own food and was regularly beaten. So that's somebody who's going to grow up and say, hey, why should I treat anybody any better? The world's a rough place full of teeth and jagged edges and sharp points, and here's some aimed at you.
That's right. That's going to come out somewhere. It's like the child abusers who 99% of them were abused as children themselves. So goes
interesting
around,
thoughts
around.
Here. Chris, number six, talk to me. Roth Radio, you're on. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, hi, David Lee Roth. Hi,
yes, sir.
I've been a big fan, long time. Just wanted to call and tell you you have a great show. One point, though, I was watching CNN yesterday, and they were talking about... Can you hear me?
Oh, we hear you perfectly. Go ahead, I'm listening.
Okay.
You got the spotlight.
I was watching CNN yesterday. They were talking about how he was, Bin Laden was, had truce before with other countries, and they said that... that after he called the truce, he bombed, I think it was Madrid, I'm pretty sure. So his word isn't exactly, you know, on the level. You know, he can say a truce, but I don't think he really means truce. So
okay.
What you were saying before about masking the word of truce, it's not going to happen.
Okay, I think what happened is that he offered a truce and they refused it. He offered a truce to Madrid, to the London, of course. You know, England, of course, refused it. And that's when the bombings occurred. And you're maintaining that even if they had accepted that truce, that would have made even a bigger bombing. Is that your thinking?
Absolutely.
Thanks for calling. Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. What do you think, Robin? Should we go to make a truce? Shall we send an envoy? Or should we just continue the military action here?
It scares me to death. And if there was going to be a truce, I wouldn't mind having this this poor girl who writes for the Christian Science Monitor, who's about to, the hostage that's over there now. There's a clock ticking on her head. How about starting there?
In terms of what? Do you think, what was she? What should we do there?
Let her go.
Should they should let her go.
Yeah.
Okay, and if they don't let her go, what should we do?
Well, that's a really tricky question, and I've been thinking a lot about that because our position is that we do not negotiate with terrorists. Meanwhile, they're killing hostages left and right, and we're going to have to watch this girl get have her head cut off.
Why was she there? What was she doing there?
Well, that's creepy, too. I don't know why anybody would be there.
Wait, stop. Why is it creepy? That's a good word. Why are you using it?
Why would, particularly from the Christian Science Monitor, now I'm sure she has good intentions and that she's there to try to unite the people in some Christian way. However, you're taking your own life into your hands. You're in the most volatile place in the world, and she gets caught. They've already killed her interpreter. She's a young girl. She's like 23 years old or something. Her parents are crying on TV, and the clock started to tick. You know,
now, wait a second. Isn't there a thing at Baghdad Airport that says you must be this tall to get into the country? And then there's a sign after that that says, when you enter, you are hereby relinquishing your permission to be filmed, and you will be filmed and will be used on Punk'd and MTV. And after that is another sign that says, abandon all hope, ye who enter. There's no backing up, and if you try, it'll be severe freaky tire damage. And after that is another sign that says, hey, you better be here with a serious focus to why, because you could possibly die. I think it says that in Dari Persian. What do you think?
I think you're right. And the permission to be filmed, what they don't say is that it's going to be in an orange jumpsuit. It's like those trees in The Wizard of Oz. Remember the scary trees that were throwing apples? Like,
don't they
stay
look like,
out of the forest. This means you.
Don't they look like Carrie? And keep in mind, I am no Bush supporter. I am no Kerry supporter. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. I don't think there would have been any difference. They both had the same lousy grade point average. They both went to the same level schools.
But you know what? At least Kerry fought in a war. That man was in the Vietnam War, and President Bush was a draft dodger.
I agree. And, you know, the truth always arrives to your ear, colored in by the person who delivers it to you. I think your ears are just the side door for truth. You know, he went to war. He was a SEAL teamer, right? In the days that he was a SEAL teamer, it took, if I'm not mistaken, 4 weeks to become a SEAL teamer and 2 weeks for parachute training at Fort Bragg. Today, to become a SEAL teamer, takes you 27 months, a six-month deployment in a third-world country, and then another 6 months in-country before you even get your first wings. It's a little stretched there. That's what we do for a living here on Roth Radio. New York, Philadelphia, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm Beach, 866-313-3733. Keith, talk to me. You're on, Keith. Roth Radio. You're in the spotlight. Hello.
Hey, Dave. How's it going?
It's going great. Talk to us.
I love you, dude. You're an amazing,
go ahead.
Amazing, amazing voice. Anyway, I have a question for you. Maybe it might change the course of the conversation. With all of the pressure that the Bush administration, this isn't all about politics, but that the Bush administration has been getting with this eavesdropping thing, it's getting really intense for him. I wonder if all of a sudden they've had this political, or this little Trump card. I don't know. I think Bin Laden's been telling stuff all the time. And now that the American public's getting all up in arms about him eavesdropping, then they use this as a Trump card to kind of neutralize that. And basically, I say, if you don't have anything that you're worried about, why does it matter if they listen if they're trying to find terrorists?
Keith, you belong in this studio with me and Dave.
That's a really excellent thought.
Yeah.
That's a very excellent thought here. Let me speak to that. Because you know how we always talk about, we romanticize how the mob, the mafia, La Cosa Nostra, was involved in protecting the piers and the docks during World War II, right? We've all heard this story. It's a very familiar issue. And we kind of turned that element into a Robin Hood story. Robin, you're familiar with this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it comes out that Lucky Luciano actually had that big boat bombed by his own guys. There was a huge cargo ship that fell over down on Pier 63 over on the Hudson, literally blew up to pieces or whatever. And that's when the mob showed up and said, hey, we can help protect these. You know, we can stop this kind of thing. They didn't let on that it was them who had caused the initial bombing already. Now, he's reflecting that Bush has had this tape, which I maintain, if you speed it up, is actually Betty Davis in the mood, Ladies with an Attitude. It sounds like Vogue to me. It's virtually indecipherable, right? How many people actually speak like that? How many people actually have a tone like that? It's almost indecipherable. You can't tell ambient. There's nothing in the background. There's no specific time frame to it. There's no visual. visual, actually, that accompanies, unless I'm mistaken? Is there a visual that comes with this?
I think there might have been.
Yeah, there was. He was sitting in front of what looked like a bookcase with a gun to his right-hand side.
And is there a newspaper with a date in the background or anything like they use in Proof of Life? Anything
no.
like that?
Okay. No, they're saying that they think it was recorded in December.
Okay, well, then it's totally abstract. And I'm going to dig what Keith is saying here, because that's a beautiful fakey-breaky move, right? Like I said, the basic tenet of all warfare is not to overpower each other. The basic tenet of all combat is deception. And if, in fact, Keith is right, that's an excellent fake-out.
Yeah, it's like the government letting us have their way.
Distraction. A distractionary maneuver. Don't go away.
David Lee Roth in the mornings.
Attention, por favor. David Lee Roth.
David Lee Roth.
Your attention, please.
Welcome to Club Dave, where it only rains when we say so.
I was a butcher.
Now, doesn't that sound like Bin Laden tape to you, sped up? It does. It may be the Bush administration is providing a distraction. We had Keith on the phone there just a second ago, and he said with all of the clamor that's surrounding the idea of further security, you know, and tapping the phones and more cameras on the streets and more uniforms in the subway and everything, that was causing a lot of consternation. So now there's a distractionary move. It's out of the same exact book, Sun Tzu. The Art of War, the basic tenet of all combat is deception. If he's right, that's a magnificent deception, isn't it? Give us a call, 866-313-3733. Joe, why are we there? Roth Radio, you're in the spotlight. Go, baby. Go ahead.
Yeah, Dave, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Dave, when I was a young kid, I used to sit in front of my TV, and I used to ask my dad, why are them people throwing stones and sticks at each other? And he used to say, son, when you get to be my age, they'll still be doing that. Them people have been doing that stuff for years, so why are we poking our nose in their business? Let's leave them alone. It's never going to stop, Dave. How are we going to change it?
Whose business are you referring to, Joe?
I'm talking about the Iraqis. Why are we over there? Why are our men over there dying for what?
Okay, well, let's give it a second here and walk through it together. Take a breath and pretend that you're going to argue in debate class from the devil's advocate point of view. I know you have a commitment to a certain point of view here. Now, I want you, just for the sake of experiment and terror here, bad choice of words, to take the opposite point of view, argue with me, and convince me why we're there. Go ahead, Joe.
That's what I'm saying, dude. I don't know why we are there. I mean, these people have been
okay, fighting. Joe, I'll do it for you. It's because the gas station for all of the United States is sitting neatly on the next border there. And what Hussein and the rest of his homeboys did was annex that country. And I'm going to walk through this slow with you. Let's go back to the early 90s. The Iraqis stormed Kuwait. Oil aside, the most brutal Viking Hell's Angel approach to anybody's ever seen. They made Idi Amin. They made Baby Doc Duvalier. They made Ceausescu and all the rest of these guys look like beginners. Now, suppose you were living in the suburbs of Kuwait. You know, you can have your wife raped. You can have your children raped. You'll have your house made into a toilet, literally. All of your museums, all of your institutions will be pillaged, looted, dragged away, and you will never see them again. All of your religious institutions and icons will be destroyed, and those guys will get drunk and party on your behalf to the end of the day, okay? They were in there for almost a year doing that. That's a gas station that we don't own. We don't take the oil. We do business with those guys, and part of the commitment contract is that we protect the gas station that sits in what we'll call a troubled neighborhood, okay? And if you don't think that fuel is of value, well, take a look at yourself in the bathroom mirror, my friend. Everything from the hair conditioner in your hair down to your wedding ring. Everything from the grommets where you tie your shoes together to the sidewalk that you walk in on is fuel implicated. Hey, I'm all for having the guy who invented Willie Nelson's soybean burning bus to come on here and tell us how to do that. But you can't even build a solar panel without being fuel implicated. You need plastic, you need steel, you need bolts, screws, trucking, etc. All fuel implicated. And if we're just going to do nothing, okay, kiss the gas station goodbye. But if you do that, do me a favor, my friend. Don't come to any hospitals. Don't go to school. Don't use the subway. Don't expect to call a taxi because all of that's going to dry up real quick. Talk to that, Joe, if you would, please.
Dave, we got enough gas in our own country to take care of it. This stuff is, I think the government has a lot to do with this. The government has a lot of, Bush, I think myself, Bush, is evil. I don't trust him. I don't like him. And I think he's messing our country up.
So what?
I really
so
do.
You know what? So what? You're going to replace him with another president? You're going to have the same beef and justifiably so. You can go back through every single president and every president we're about to collect. It's all going to be the same issue here. So what you're saying is, no, we've got enough gas. We'll just use up what we've got left. And then what, Joe?
Yeah, Dave, that's not what I'm saying. I understand what people are going through over there. But I think the reason we were bombed is because our government is sticking our nose where we don't belong.
Well, I couldn't disagree with you more, but I like the way you say it, Joe. Thanks. 866-313-3733. Eric, talk to me. Roth Radio, New York, Philly, Boston, Dallas, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, West Palm Beach. What's up, Eric?
Good morning, Diamond Dave. Doing a great job.
Thanks. Go ahead.
Here's my thing, brother. I don't care if he offers a truce. Who cares if he offers a truce? But the real problem comes down to the matter of politics. We are not going to lose face to someone who does something like this and then comes back and offers a simple truce to try and rectify the problem. It isn't going to happen.
Okay, well, I look at these individuals, I look at Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden as violent, homicidal, rapist, parole violators. And if you've sent the Dallas SWAT team over to the apartment building and said, hey, the Hussein brothers are in there, they're on parole. They got off on a technicality. They raped, beat, and annihilated entire, well, probably three or four countries during his reign of terror there. And he got off on a technicality. Now he's on house arrest, like Junior on The Sopranos, okay? Purely a technicality. Somebody comes down from the apartment building and says, I just saw through his window. He's got a tank in there, he's got a helicopter in there, and he's got a bunch of AK-47s in there. Okay, great. We now send the Dallas SWAT team down to the door. Saddam says, I'm not coming out. His buddy's out in front. They take the investigator, the parole officer, and they say, get out of here. And they throw him down the stairs. What would you expect to happen to that parole violator at the end of the day? Exactly. That's what happened to him. He was on parole for raping a country. And now these individuals are, you know, going to stand up and say, yeah, well, I've had a change of faith. That's like me going, I changed the course of study here. We're going to do Bible study. What do you think, Robin?
I keep wondering if Saddam Hussein was a fall guy for Osama. I've always wondered if they were in bed together, no pun intended, but, you know, if they were in cahoots. And did we abandon going after Osama and take Saddam, who deservedly should have been taken, but did we take him to pull focus from not getting Osama?
I think they're probably circling the whole neighborhood. There's probably political subterfuge going on there, just like in anything else. I don't grace the current administration with any great salute or any of the past administrations with any great salute, and you bet that there are third and fourth agendas going on behind the scenes. I'm looking to the ultimate eminent result. It's beyond politics. It's beyond who's the president. It's beyond anything except that there is a strategic element. It's our fuel station. And until we figure out solar power and all the rest of this, it'll be a disaster if we don't protect that. And we're justified in doing it. We're not taking the oil. We're buying it.
I agree. I also think that as America, we have a responsibility. We are the most evolved country in, well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, among other countries, but we're certainly, you know, in the top five evolved countries on the planet, and we have a responsibility to go out there and teach and spread democracy and get women out of burqas and put children in schools and I don't know, I'd like to fight against the war, but I really do see a reason for it.
Yeah, and once Iran again goes ballistic and becomes a major concern for many, many, many countries, because there's a big issue in there, everybody all of a sudden is going to be very, very glad that we have half a dozen airports sitting right next to that. Because again, it's going to impact the way we live. What happens in America, I think, is usually we kind of play ostrich. Selective denial is what I practice. It's very easy to do. It's like me complaining about you downloading my songs for free. But I'm wearing a counterfeit wristwatch I bought for $14 in Chinatown. Maybe this is what causes me also to doubt Bin Laden's latest missive. Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. Ted, talk to me. Number nine. You're on Spotlight. Go.
Hey, Dave. Great show.
Thank you.
You know, I don't think we should listen to Osama bin Laden and the truce, and I'll tell you why. Remember back in the 80s when Iran was fighting Iraq?
Certainly.
Where do you think Iraq got their weapons?
Okay.
The United States. And then what happened? They turned around and used them against us when they invaded Kuwait, and we tried to help Kuwait out. So the same thing is going to happen. If we accept the truce and let him rebuild Afghanistan and Iraq, he's going to make all that money, and he's going to turn around and use it right against us.
Parole violators. You're going to let them arm themselves up? You're going to let them keep the cops out of the door?
You can't.
You're going to even let them live next to you?
No.
Well, these are violent homicidal rapists, literally.
That's right.
And these are parole violators. And that's the way I see what happened with Osama bin Laden. He had how many times? Just think of a UN and whoever as the warrant-serving cops from Dallas SWAT. You watch the TV show, I know. And they stood up to the door and said, you violent, homicidal, freak-out rapist. You got off on a technicality. We hear you've got stuff inside. And if you don't let us in, you're going to become a whole new episode. That's what I think happened with him.
And Osama, too, we trained him during the Afghanistan-Russian thing.
Makes him even more dangerous.
Yep. He's got, you know, he learned to use those weapons because we gave them to him. Oops. But, you know, to have him turn it against us, it's...
And that's true. And that's a total tradition amongst human beings. Come on. Whether it's Benedict Arnold upset because he didn't get promoted.
Mm-hmm. Brutus. I mean, it goes way, way back.
Oh, yeah. This is the issue. Well, we shouldn't have done business because he turned his back on me later. You telling me your blood family hasn't done that occasionally, especially during Christmas, right? Roth Radio, 866-313-3733. And we're worldwide here from Broadway to Cheyenne, Roanoke to Rio. DavidLeeRoth.com or the DavidLeeRothShow.com. Elizabeth, talk to Daddy. Number 10. Elizabeth, you're on.
Yeah. Hey, Dave.
What's up, Elizabeth?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, my God. I can't believe I'm talking to you. Great, great, great artist you are.
Thank you.
I've loved you forever.
What's on your mind today, Elizabeth?
My feeling is that I'm kind of through my gut instinct. This isn't about religion. There's a Pandora's box that's been open here. You got a guy with a bunch of money and a huge ego, and I don't think that Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden would want to be linked to each other, because the two of them are so freaking arrogant that there's no truce. This thing's going to just keep going.
In terms of the two of them not getting along, it becomes the old expression, you may be my enemy, but the enemy of my enemy is now my friend. And that's how human beings have always done it. I don't care if you're in the Boy Scouts or the first largest military power on Earth. That's how politics work. And that's what I meant by soccer. European football is a much better working template for kids to figure out how the Earth moves. There's not two lines of people moving together like Napoleon anymore. It's 14 different spots on the field, constantly shifting set of strategies, constantly shifting set of directions, and constantly you have to keep rethinking what you just achieved. There is no finish. It's a process. Do you think that this is a process that we should continue in, Elizabeth?
I really don't know at this point. I don't know. I went to Israel after 9/11.
Yeah, and what did you see?
Iraqis. I went to the Wailing Wall. I went to Jerusalem. It was the most incredible experience of my life.
And what was the impact?
These people are nice, and the media is completely tearing apart wonderful human beings, and that pisses me off.
How do you mean the media is tearing apart wonderful human beings, Liz?
They're making all Iraqis are scum. This one, they're showing everything ugly about it when there was so much spirituality. I mean, I could feel it through me. I mean, one screaming for Allah. The mosque is right next to the Wailing Wall. I went to the Stations of Christ. It was amazing. I mean, and they're all right on top of each other.
Okay, so what you're saying is that we do not belong in Iraq and we should let things develop in and of their own time and result. Is that correct?
I believe they belong there because I feel sorry for these people. They're starving and they're not getting any. I mean, their hotels are half empty. And I believe that the arrogant assholes, are ruining it for an entire race of people.
So you're saying we should take our military out of there, is that true?
No.
You're saying we should stay there in an attempt to stabilize the good and the positive that you witnessed.
Yes.
Thank you for calling. You. Roth Radio, ruining it for everybody else. Robin, you got a final there?
I was just thinking, don't you think some of this has to do with the fact that America supports Israel?
Oh, of course it does. Like I said, there's second, third agendas to everything going on here. All you got to do is read one of those James Clavell novels like Shogun. It's, you know, webs within webs, mirrors within mirrors. Bones, James Bond.
You know, Saddam just, he's changing his defense team again. And
yeah, that's because they killed the last one.
They keep killing him. But I heard that... It was actually one of Letterman's top 10 jokes the other night that now he's switched over to the law firm of Mohammed, 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 and Weintraub.
It's going to be Weintraub who could probably win the case, baby.
David Lee Roth in the morning.
These are allegations.
You are tuned directly to David Lee Roth. How about a little fire, Scarecrow? Sie haben sich direkt zu David Lee Roth dazugeschaltet. Wie wäre es mit etwas Feuer, Vogelscheuche?
Fire up this funk and let's have it. It'll make you dance.
It's gonna make you feel freaky, baby.
Roth Radio busting out. Boy, are we a nation at war or whatever? NBA investigates Davis going into the stands. Did you guys see that on the TV set?
Oh, my God.
I think I know what happened. But I'm going to read you try and decipher what happened here. I'm going to read the articles. New York Knicks forward Antonio Davis awaited word Thursday on whether he'll be suspended for climbing into the stands to confront a man during a game in Chicago. The fan said he did nothing wrong and was attacked by Davis's wife. I'm reading behind the lines here. The altercation came in overtime Wednesday night at the Bulls, blah, blah. Davis said he thought his wife was in danger and later released a statement saying the fan was drunk. That's a lie, says 22-year-old Michael Axelrod in a phone interview, who is now, who is now suing for $1 million, and he's suspended for 5 games, okay? What do you think about that?
Here's what happened. This was last year. I know all about this.
Okay.
There's a player. He's an Indiana Pacer. His name's Ron Artest. He went into the stands after a fan threw a beer on him.
Okay.
It got him angry. He went running up into the stands. A whole melee ensued. And the refs didn't break it up. And this is going on at a Pistons game in Detroit. So Artest gets suspended for the whole year, and the Pacers, who could have won the playoffs, they didn't because Artest was a good player.
He was a pivotal player, and they suspended him.
And they suspended him. So now Davis's wife is in the stands, and Davis sees this guy.
There's a tussle. There's a dust up.
Something going on. And okay. It was reported that his wife might have been, you know, kind of riling the guy up a little, like, haha, because the guy was a fan of the other team. And so, but anyway, he sees this guy going toward his wife and he goes running up into the stands to protect his family. And this moron is now going to sue
for
$1 million. And Davis was suspended for 5 days without pay. And it's a.
And now he's going to take a beating.
So much stuff. He's going to take such a beating. The alcohol at the games, that they allow that. The fact that the security blows.
Stop. Was his wife drinking?
Not his wife. The guy next. The guy who she was tussling with.
You know what I think probably happened? Was the guy standing in front of her or next to her? Do we know?
I think he was sitting next to her.
Because probably she had a rolled up program or a newspaper or something, right? This is typical stuff. We talked earlier about how women have a decidedly second standard that men don't have. A girl can walk up to any guy sitting on a couch at a lounge or a bar or a club and sit down on his lap, right? Mush your hair up, put her arm around you like this, give you a big, wet, sloppy French kiss like that, and there's no way you can try that in court. But if I did that to you, I'd probably lose the car cash commercials.
But are you? She wasn't flirting with the guy. If anything, he was a fan of the other team.
And you know,
and he probably knew that, you know, Davis was her husband, and she was probably saying, you know, nah, we just scored. She was probably razzing him a bit.
No, what she probably did, because we all watch video, we all know what's acceptable and what's what the boundaries are, and the line has moved considerably for women, okay? And it says here he was behind her. So she probably turned around, I'm just guessing, probably turned around with a rolled-up program and smacked him. Right upside the shoulder or something. Maybe it slid across the shoulder and hit his little face. You follow what I'm saying? Or hit him in the chest or poked him with it. You know, if he's yelling and screaming and she turns around and says, shut up, you know, sticks him with that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Have we seen a picture of him? Is there a mark? Is there anything on him that shows violence?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Well, here's something you didn't know, is that Axelrod, this is the guy who supposedly was damaged, scarred emotionally, probably permanently. This has been a tragic transition in his life. His future is now in jeopardy. His social references questioned. His future education suspect. All because of this one tragic incident of a woman hitting him with a rolled up magazine or possibly a program. And you didn't know that Axelrod's father is a prominent Democratic political consultant in Chicago who has worked with Senators Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Chicago Mayor Richard M. Daley. Okay. I don't want to quote him, but the spin stops here. I never thought I'd quote him. You got to stop the spin right here. This guy, this kid is gearing up. He's got a political consultant who knows how to pull the strings of public opinion in the media. He's already got political connections. These people are going to sue him, mash him into paste. And you know what? They're going to win. He's going to have to settle out. That's why I ask, does Junior have a mark on him? Anything like that? Anybody seen a picture of him?
I saw the interview afterwards. They did an interview, I think it was on CNN, and he didn't look as if he was harmed. He was smiling.
Yeah, well, he's smiling because his future education.
His ship just came in.
Yeah, his next 14 vacations to the Nassau Bahamas just came in. The next bling that he's going to wear on his wrist and, you know, his nose ring just came in. Give us a call if you think this is acceptable. 866-313-3733. I don't know if homeboy should have run into the stands, but in terms of a tussle with a gal, okay, that was intervened instantly, and there's no marks. That's the first thing the cops look for in a domestic dispute.
I know,
dispute.
I've watched a lot of cops, and that is always the first thing they say when you watch cops on TV. And there's a, you know, it's a domestic abuse thing. Well, you know, do you have any marks on your face?
If there's any mark at all, you're going to jail.
That's right.
Routinely, I was on a lot of calls like that when I was working EMT in the back of the ambulance there. If it's a domestic dispute or a gang-oriented kind of conflict, or somebody got beat up at school, or first thing they look for them to keep an evidence camera in the trunk for that. Any little red mark, any bruises on your arms, your throat, whatever, then somebody's going to jail. And I'm asking now, how come homeboy didn't go to jail? And the answer to that is probably he had no visible marks, no contusions, no bruises, no lacerations. You go right down the list as an EMT. And I'm wondering if he even went to the hospital behind this. Give us a call, 866-313-3733. Laura, you're on number 6 Roth Radio. You're good to go. Laura, talk to me.
Hi. I feel like he was misjudged because she was pointing her finger in his face and screaming on the news. That's what I saw anyway.
Oh, well, that's worth $1 million.
She seems aggressive, and I do think he has the right to sue if he's being, you know, harassed or, you know, screamed at or, you know, I don't know. It seemed like she was harassing him.
Laura, you live in Queens. Do you take the subway?
I used to.
Do you ever have anybody say, would you get the F out of my way?
Absolutely, and I've said it back to them.
That's right. Did you sue him?
Well, if they pointed their finger in my face, yes, I would have called the cops and had them arrested. Yes.
Somebody pointing a finger in your face?
You know what?
Screaming and pointing her finger in his face. Yes, absolutely.
You know what, Laura? Someday you're going to make some young man very unhappy. You imperious clown. You freaky deaky little stooge. You're the reason that this has become a litigating culture. A bunch of lying, imperious, made of paper, made of glass stooges like you. Because somebody gave a finger meaning and hurt your feeling. There'll be more back on Oprah after this. Because somebody told me a name. You gotta grow up. Call us back when you're younger. 866-313-3733. And by the way, the wife has a history of harassing players and coaches, etc. Everybody's handing this off from the internet and stuff. This gal had a history here, Akissic. Here's one email from Kokomo. I don't think Antonio Davis went up into the stands to protect his wife. Whew, interesting. I think he simply saw the nacho vendor and he wanted a bite to eat. He's like, yo, nacho dude, give me one with jalapeno cheese and a lot. Also, if the fan wasn't drunk, he should have been. It was a Bull Knicks game, for Christ's sake.
But, you know, these athletes have to take crap all the time, and the security at these games is so subpar. They don't break up the melees. They're selling booze, and everybody's getting loaded. And they get, you know, sports fans, they're getting really loaded.
All right, I've had enough of this animal. Break this up!
Break it up!
But wait.
David Lee Roth, weekday mornings.